I'm Joe Bianca.
I'm Bill Stanley.
I'm Jonathan Green.
They say the harder the work, the greater the reward. This is our life's work.
Good morning. It is 9:16, Wednesday, May 12th. This is the TDN Writers Room presented by Keeneland. My name is Joe Bianca. I'm the associate editor of the Thoroughbred Daily News, and I can assure you guys the only cream or ointment I've taken this week is innocent old HGH.
Hey, Joe. I'm Bill Finley, correspondent with the Thoroughbred Daily News. I hate weeks like this. We have nothing to talk about.
I know. Jonathan Green, general manager of DJ Stable. And I guess the best thing you can say about the Bob Baffert press conference is that it wasn't hosted by Rudy Giuliani at the Four Seasons Landscaping Company.
It might have been an upgrade.
Well, either way, there was a lot of manure in the background. So.
The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Keeneland. The flexibility to buy and sell year-round, the convenience of an intuitive digital platform, the opportunity to reach a global audience and never leave the farm. No matter your strategy, Keeneland's digital sales ring provides an advantage that's yours for the taking. Backed by the most trusted name in thoroughbred sales, find your digital advantage at the Keeneland May Digital Sale. Entries close May 18th. Visit KeenelandDigital.com for details. So where to begin? Where to begin of the events of the past 3 days? It seems like it's been even longer since the hastily thrown together press conference on Sunday morning of Bob Baffert to announce that his horse, the winner of the Kentucky Derby, Medina Spirit, had tested positive for 21 picograms of betamethasone. Now, there's a lot to say about Bob Baffert and kind of the way he's pushed the lines and pushed the limits all these years. And the way he's honestly really embarrassed himself this week and has, I think, made the situation worse every time he opens his mouth. I think there's a lot to say about that and Bob Baffert and the individual drug. And we're going to get to all that. This entire show is going to be about this incident because it's such a big deal. But just to start off for me, I think the focus should not be on Bob Baffert solely and this drug and Medina Spirit. I think if you do that and we have an hour-long discussion about betamethasone and what it does to horses and what the level is, I think you're really missing the forest for the trees, because this is a story that is much bigger and has much bigger ramifications and implications than just Bob Baffert's horse failing a test at the Derby. This is the result of an industry that has looked the other way and has no deterrence for cheating trainers all of these years. Like, this has been a long time in the making, and it's honestly shocking that it hasn't blown up in a huge race like this. But now we have it. Now we have our first drug DQ for the Derby in almost 50 years, or over 50 years. It's been since the 60s. And it just, you know, I'm not saying that this is the case in this instance where Bob Baffert was doing this awful thing with steroids and he was trying to get away with something and trying to juice up the horse. Maybe he's right. Maybe it was contamination from an ointment that he gave the horse. It's almost beside the point, because this is a sport that has done next to nothing to deter people breaking the rules for decades. I almost think of it as like if the steroid era in baseball lasted for 40 years and no one ever did anything about it. That's what racing has been for several decades. And you've been playing with fire this whole time and letting guys slide who push the limits. And now the sport looks like a joke once again on an international scale. And I wish I could say it was surprising. You know, if anything, I'm surprised that this kind of thing has not happened sooner. And I think there's so much blame to go around here for this industry. And I think, you know, a lot of it starts in California, because that's where Baffert is stabled. If you want to go all the way back to 2011 through 2013, when seven of his horses mysteriously dropped dead and really nothing came of that. If you want to go back to the scopolamine positive for Justify and that, how that was swept under the rug by the CHRB while the CHRB chairman had an interest in horses with Baffert. I mean, it never ends in this game where guys break the rules, they get a slap on the wrist, and there's absolutely no deterrence. So it's not surprising that something like this happened. And, you know, as much egg on its face as racing has right now, it's 100% deserved. not necessarily for this single incident, but for the tolerance of rule breaking and rule stretching that we've had, you know, within the industry for decades. I'll toss it over to Bill.
Yeah, thanks, Joe. Again, where do you start with this? And let me take this. I think that, you know, the one thing that's going on now is everybody is taking sides or trying to figure out, is he guilty? Is he innocent? If he's guilty, how guilty is he? If he's innocent, how much is he getting railroaded? So those are the various extremes. I'd love to have an opinion on this. I don't know. That's what's so frustrating about this. To me, nothing quite makes sense. So let's take, first of all, that, you know, that he gave this drug to a horse in an ointment, and it shows up in the positive test. Is that plausible? Is that something that really could have happened? You have to think, maybe not, or scratch your head, because this guy's supposed to be the best trainer in the world right now, the best trainer in the United States. How on earth could he be so sloppy to make a mistake like that? How on earth could his veterinarian be so sloppy to make a mistake like that? This Automax thing that they're talking about now, on the box, it says betamethasone right on the box. So you're telling me you never noticed that? Your veterinarian, who, you know, presumably has been treating horses for years, presumably been treating horses with this betamethasone / Automax, didn't know that, didn't say to you, Bob, I don't know if you want to use this because you might come up with a positive there. So the whole thing about, you know, the latest line from Baffert, which there's always an excuse. Somebody pissed in the stall. Jimmy Barnes had a salon patch on. My dog ate my homework, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There's always an excuse. That's why people are so frustrated about this. So the whole line that they're coming up with now, I don't really believe. And I think, you know, his credibility has been shattered. It's very hard to believe. However, at the same time, I don't get the other scenario. Why on earth would a guy give this rather innocuous drug to a horse right before the biggest race of his career, when he had to know there was a huge chance of getting caught, and it's really not a performance-enhancing drug? That makes no sense either. I have no idea what's going on here, other than I will reiterate some of the points you made earlier. It's a horrible story for horse racing, absolutely horrible. And I'll go on record right now saying this is worse than Navarro and Service, not because of the degree or the potency of the drugs, because the man on the street, the general public, has no idea who Jorge Navarro and Jason Service are. Everybody, the guy at the water cooler, the guy at your gym, knows who Bob Baffert is. People are talking about this all over the country. It's been on the national news two nights in a row. So the black eye and the egg on the face of racing is even worse with this than with our friends Navarro and Service.
And I got to tell you, when I was getting ready for this show, I kept hearkening back to that show that we did in March, where, you know, about the indictments and what was going on. And I remember sitting before that show and saying to myself, I have very mixed emotions, because on the one hand, you know, you look at our industry, an industry that we all love, and you say, you know, how could this happen? How could two of the top trainers in the country, as far as wins and as far as top races, how could they, you know, be involved in a situation like this? And, you know, we hit rock bottom. And then part of me said, the optimist said, you know what, maybe this is great for the industry, and we're finally cleaning it up, and we're finally getting all the people that are involved in cheating, or at least it's going to be a scare tactic for other people who are in power and are training horses and veterinarians and around the care of horses. And maybe it's a wake up call for them. And this will start to trumpet in a new regime and a new feeling of the industry. And we got, you know, a great interview with Travis Tigard, and we felt like that Heise was going to be on board. And then, you know, a couple of groups, you know, are against that. And we took five steps backwards. And then we had, you know, all these great races coming up to the Derby, and everyone was getting really excited about the Derby. And it was, you know, the first four horses were up in front, and everyone had a feel good story about that going into the Preakness. And then like 72 hours later, it just came crashing down again. And as optimistic as I am about, you know, about things, when are we going to hit bottom? I mean, what is bottom? Is bottom the indictments? Obviously not. Is bottom this? I don't think so, because we still don't know, you know, realistically, we don't know if, you know, Baffert is innocent or guilty. If it's just a circumstance, a bunch of circumstances that are, you know, connecting the dots, and that's what's making people say, okay, he's cheating. Or is it just terrible mismanagement, you know, on the highest degree, you know, for a trainer to not even be watching what's going on in his own outfit. And this is a guy who isn't at 16 different racetracks, like a lot of the other super trainers are. He's basically primarily, his home base is in California. So how many barns and how many horses does he really have to watch over? And it's just time and time again where these horses are coming to positive. So I'm really conflicted internally. My initial reaction was, oh, he cheated. Well, personally, I'm not really surprised because of past history. But it now it's like, well, is it just a smokescreen and he's got really good counsel and really good people kind of steering him out of this situation? And maybe he was, guilty of this. Or is it just absolute the worst mismanagement by a CEO, in essence, that we've seen in recent history?
John, I want to jump in and just tell you, you said, where does this all end? And I don't want to be, the doom and gloom guy here or too over the top with anything, but I'll tell you where this ends. It ends with the abolition of the sport. That's why this stuff is so serious. That's why, to me, like the whipping problem is something that, I don't want to go down there obviously today, but why people have to take this seriously. There are forces out there that are very powerful forces that want to see horse racing put out of business. And every time something like this happens, we inch closer to that day where fill in the blank, maybe New York, maybe California, whatever, there's a referendum on their state ballot to say, can horse racing exist any longer? Like they did with the dog racing. And enough people say, no, it can't be, that the game is closed. Dog racing in Florida, same thing. This can happen to thoroughbred racing. I know it can happen to thoroughbred racing. It would be the worst thing that we could ever imagine for the sport that, again, we all are very fond of and have had so much enjoyment over the years. But this is where this is headed. And every time, even if Baffert was just sloppy, and that give him the benefit of the doubt. Damn him for being sloppy and putting horse racing in under this microscope again, which I think is furthering the cause of the animal rights activists and horse racing's enemies and moving us a little bit closer to doomsday.
100% agreed. And this is why I always talk about you need to be stewards of the game. If you're in any kind of position of power or influence in this sport, you need to think beyond just your bottom line, the bottom line of your racetrack or whatever it is. We all have to be stewards of the game because, like Bill says, the game is in a very, very precarious position right now where things could go either way. And thankfully, supposedly, maybe we do have reform coming, in the near future that can help in that regard. But who knows how many PR hits we're going to take between now and then when it's finally implemented. And, the importance of being stewards of the game, everybody who's let something slide at the regulatory level over the years, I think bears some responsibility for this. So when we rail about places like Arizona letting proven cheaters like Marcus Vitali enter horses, we're not getting up in arms because we care so much about Turf Paradise and Marcus Vitali. It's because that's not important enough to make national news, but it's symbolic of the culture of looking the other way on cheaters. And that's a culture that will eventually trickle up into the biggest races in the sport. So now here we are. Now we've had this culture of permissibility and just kind of letting things slide. If guys fill stalls for your track and for your in your jurisdiction, and that's, that's where we end up. And one of the things I wanted to say is that I've heard a lot of excuses made for Bob Baffert. And, we talked about this on the show. He had two horses DQ'd from million-dollar races in the past year. And that still did not stop this from coming. So, I've had heard a lot of excuses, and many by Bob himself. There's a new excuse every single day. But, I think he doesn't realize, and I think some people in racing don't realize, that people aren't trying to hear that anymore. Like, the status quo of zero accountability is no longer sustainable for the sport, and it's no longer acceptable to the public. People are tired of the sport that they love, which is already, like Bill said, in danger of extinction, being made to look like a joke in front of the world time and time again. And that's, that's what we get, I think, a lot of times. And, Bob's full of excuses, and I think he doesn't realize that the era of excuses is over. The relatively few people who are still supporting this game have had enough. And he's, he may be right that the testing system is broken, and hopefully help is coming in that regard. But what's more broken is the system of toothless enforcement and the laughable lack of deterrence. And that's the biggest problem. That's a bigger problem than anything. And it's encouraged guys like Bob Baffert to continue to push the limits until it blows up in everybody's face. And we all look bad now because of this. And, you know, if you're watching the show and you're a casual follower racing, maybe you're watching for the first time, there is major reform coming. The Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Act was passed in late December, and it's going to unify the drug policy and enforcement in the sport. However, we have people in the industry who are suing to stop that from coming into being. And I think that's pretty symbolic. And I would love to hear from some of the horsemen's groups today on how unconstitutional the HISA is and how we have to stop it. You know, I would love to hear from them today and what they think of what the current status quo system has wrought.
I want to go back to a point that I made up earlier, because I want both you and John to weigh in on this. Because we've talked about this in the past before even anybody had ever heard of betamethasone, about Baffert, obviously, because of all the positives and all the suspicions surrounding him. Of the three of us, I've been more of someone, not necessarily pro Baffert, but defending him or saying, you know, maybe he's right. Maybe this just is, you know, just terrible bad luck. I'd like to hear from John and then you. Again, where do you, you know, obviously the man deserves a day in court. Let the split sample come back. I understand all this. But as we speak here on Wednesday morning, do you think he is guilty of cheating or intended to cheat to win the Kentucky Derby? I want both of you to answer that.
I think that's two very different questions, Bill. And I think they're very valid questions. Number one, I don't think as much as I want to, I don't think that the cream that they were using, if it was for antifungal and all that, you know, all the other excuses, that's what made Medina Spirit win the race. I really don't feel like that the bomb that they were using, if it really was that, if that's what the positive was from, that is what got Medina Spirit out in front and stayed in front. I don't necessarily believe that, but do I feel like that Baffert has taken an edge time and time again? Absolutely. Personally, I feel that.
Right. And that's where I am too, is like, I guess at the top, I don't want to get bogged down in the minutiae of this drug and this test and, you know, this horse. This has been a widespread problem in the sport along with Baffert himself over the years, who has pushed the limits. He's failed 30 tests. Like, how could you possibly not say with all of that evidence that he's not doing something he shouldn't be doing? Like, that's just, it's a man. And he's not the only guy, by the way. There are plenty of other guys who are top trainers in the game who have lots of positives. But, you know, I when we talked about this off the air, I think that one of your arguments, Bill, was, you know, he's not service in Navarro. And I would agree with that. I don't think that he's, you know, doing something as nefarious as Jason Service and Jorge Navarro, where I think it's a little more subtle what he's doing if he's taking an edge. But I think it's even more important for him to play by the rules than it was for Jorge Navarro and Jason Service, because he is the standard bearer for the sport. If you asked, you said the man on the street, name a thoroughbred trainer, most of them probably couldn't name any, but the ones that could name one, they would say Bob Baffert. So this is like, this is as if LeBron James was using PEDs. He is the standard bearer for that sport. And if he's doing it, then you have no other conclusion but to assume the people below him are all cheating and all doing the wrong thing too. And that's not the case in racing. I think most people are trying to do the right things. But if you're a layman and you're looking from outside the sport and you see this guy's the most decorated trainer in the business and he's cheating, what does that tell you about the rest of the sport? Like, you only have one conclusion to draw. And that's like, you know, that's why it's so frustrating to me that people are fighting. There's people fighting against the implementation of reform. You know, think about this. It's only been 2 years in racing that we've had the epidemic of breakdowns at Santa Anita, the FBI indictments, and now the Kentucky Derby winner being disqualified potentially for drugs. This has only happened in the span of about 2 years. And there are still people who are like, nah, this is working out pretty well. Let's continue with this and let's kick the can down the road with this system. And it's just, it's absolute insanity. And I'm not saying that, you know, HISA is going to be the panacea and is going to, you know, fix everything and every issue. Surely there's still going to be some guys trying to get away with things. But the one thing that Travis Tigard said that stuck with me was, you know, but he said very matter-of-factly, people are either going to fall in line and play by the rules, or they're going to be forced to leave the sport. And that's really it. You know, that's the crux of the issue. And not only has racing failed to do that over the years, if anything, they've encouraged guys like Bob Baffert to bend the rules. And they've encouraged guys like Jason Servais and Jorge Navarro and look the other way. It's been the opposite of deterrence. It's been encouragement for people to you know, try to break the, you know, try to get an edge along the way. And that to me is the bigger deal than anything, is that, you know, I do think most people in racing are honest and trying to do it the right way. But when the system, the infrastructure itself is led to let guys slide when they break the rules, this is going to be what the sport looks like on the major stages. It's eventually going to come out when everybody's watching. And that's what happened. Go ahead, John.
And Joe, I think that's exactly the problem. As much as I hate to say it, you know, Bill, you go back as far as I do, as far as watching races. And when Oscar Barrera and other of his compatriots were juicing horses or milkshaking claimers, nobody really cared. You know, I mean, the average bettor maybe cared, but for the most part, it wasn't affecting newsworthy races. And it certainly wasn't infiltrating, you know, sales and pedigrees. But now on this grand stage that you have this, you know, whether it was Jason Servais with Maximum Security or Bob Baffert now with, you know, with these alleged issues, it's what people on the street are asking. And if we're begging people to come into this business and saying, come in, please, you know, we want your money, we want you to be involved, and it's such a great thing, and then all they know about is, you know, the alleged cheating and what's going on this grand scale, what are they thinking about what's going on in their own, you know, on their own racetrack? And it's just a huge deterrent to try to get people in. And I'll let you go. I'll let you talk in a second. You know, a perfect example is, like, we ran a horse in the Derby 2 weeks ago, and I got, you know, some really nice emails and texts and good luck and everything like that. I got 60 or 70 people, I'm not exaggerating, over the past couple of days asking me about Bob Baffert. Like, three times as many people asked me about this situation than about running in the Derby. So it's mainstreamed, and it gave us another black eye. And quite frankly, we're running out of eyes.
Yeah, I mean, John, I think the general public, we've been talking about this right now, thinks that horse racing is about the same as pro wrestling, so far when credibility and you know, whether things are fixed. And no, we don't think that it is, but you can't blame people for thinking that way. And, you know, that goes back to some of the points Joe made and the point that I've made as well about, you know, the image of racing and where the hell we're going to be with this in 25 years from now. But I'll start another thread, if you guys don't mind, about another direction to go down. So now that Baffert has said, yeah, he had this stuff in him, you know, we don't think the split sample is going to come back negative. And we think at the end of the day, he's going to have a drug positive on the winner of the Kentucky Derby. Are we certain they're going to disqualify this horse? And the reason why I say that is, once upon a time, the absolute insurer rule was set in stone. It doesn't matter what happened. If the groom pissed in the stall, you could have been on vacation 1,000 miles away. If your horse has a drug positive, you are responsible as the trainer, no matter what. But look what they did in Arizona with Charlatan and Gamin. Very similar story here. Matter of fact, you know, Gamin has was tested positive twice. The second time for Beth-O-Medazone. So the Arkansas Racing Commission, at the end of the day, made a ruling that pretty much went like this. Yeah, you put some drugs into the horse, but it wasn't really all that big a deal. And, you know, it was a pretty interesting story about Salon Pass. So guess what? You are going to be reinstated as the winner of the Arkansas Derby. I think Kentucky's got more balls than Arkansas does. But it goes back to what Joe said. In hindsight, what a terrible decision that was. The Arkansas Racing Commission to have a positive on a grade one $1 million race, saying, nah, never mind.
Yeah, I mean that was ridiculous, because they upheld the decision, but then reversed the purse distribution and just gave him a small fine. You know, $5,000 is nothing to Bob Baffert. There's absolutely no deterrence. We'll be right back after this message.
They say, the harder the work, the greater the reward. And this is hard work. It's the hours put in before dawn and after dark, It's the sacrifice, the sweat, the failure, and the faith. This is our industry. This is our life's work.
Owning a multiple graded stakes winning racehorse like Decorated Invader is attainable with a racing partnership like West Point Thoroughbreds. Partnerships enable you to spread your ownership across several horses for less than it costs to own one horse alone. This increases your racetrack action and your chances for a big horse. Learn more about why West Point Thoroughbreds is the gold standard in racing partnerships at westpointtb.com. There becomes this question now of what racing can do. We're going to talk to Alan Foreman in a little bit. I want to ask him about this. What realistically and legally racing can do to prevent guys like Bob Baffert from embarrassing their sport. And the problem is that he's become such a big deal that you're not going to just ban him overnight and then redistribute his horses. We saw Spendthrift do a little bit of that yesterday. You know, it's going to be hard, even if you try to ban Bob Baffert, to unwind all of that. He's going to have all sorts of challenges in courts and everything. And it becomes a very difficult thing to try to, you know, now save face after all this. Like, to me, the time to prevent this and to stop this from happening and to you know, keep positive PR in the sport was years ago. It was years ago when Bob Baffert broke the rules time and time again. And you just said, you know what? He fills stalls. He's got big name horses. He brings a lot of, you know, puts asses in the seats, you know, for lack of a better term. And, you know, it's all good with us. And that's how we got to this point. Now, I don't know what kind of legal standing you have to say, yeah, Bob, get out of here. You can't race here anymore because you had this positive at the Derby. When you've let him slide all the time, all along, like, how hypocritical would it be for racing now to be like, well, that's, you know, and shout out to Churchill. I'll give Churchill credit for having a no-nonsense statement that says, you know, this is unacceptable. We'll not accept any of his entries going forward. But where was this all along? Like, where has that kind of, you know, actual enforcement been all along? And you haven't seen it. I always say this, but the only guy they really got out of here was Rick Dutrow. That's the only guy in like 20 something years of following racing that I really saw, you know, an organization crack down on and say, hey, you got to get out of here. Don't come back for 20 years. Everyone else, slap on the wrist, couple $1,000 fine, carry on business as usual. And it was always going to lead to this. Racing is lucky that it didn't come out in this way before now. This was always how this is going to end. And hopefully we have reform coming, but you know, this has been let happen along the way by all the complicity in this business. Go ahead, John.
Well, and the only other way, if it's not going to be legal sanctions that are going to force, you know, the hand of a trainer, then it has to be through either social pressure or that their owners, you know, are moving horses. And I think one of the things that my racehorse has done is obviously it's opened up the game to, via the micro share, it's opened up the game to a lot of new investors. And Spendthrift is very involved and very invested in that model. So I thought it wasn't a coincidence that when this came out, that Spendthrift led the way and said, hey, we're moving horses away from this guy. To me, that spoke volumes. I mean, that was more than a 30-day suspension could hurt a guy like a trainer of a caliber of Bob Baffert. When you get major owners like Spendthrift Farms that gives him tens of millions of dollars worth of horse flesh every year to train and to try to win grade one races, and they take a pause and say, we're moving horses. It's not even so much, we're not giving you any new horses. It's we're moving horses away from you, taking horses out of your stable, good horses, and giving them to your competitor. That is the deterrent that trainers are going to see, where they go, oh crap, maybe this is something that's real. And anecdotally, I can give you one more thing. Over the past 30 years, we've run horses. We've actually run and competed in over 15,000 races. And you know how many horses we've had a positive test for in this 30 plus years? One. And you know what happened the following week after we had one positive? We moved the horses. And we've never have had a positive since. Now, not that we're you know, choir boys and always above board. And we try to do things the right way. We try to hire people who do the right thing. And at the end of the day, we hope that we're going to have, you know, people where if our horses win a race, I don't have to wake up the next morning and run to my phone and see if there was a, you know, a drug positive for my horses. But there are the majority of people, I think, in the business, and Joe, you said this before, that do a good job and do the right thing. The problem is we're all getting our lunches stolen from us by people who are cheating. And it's hard to do the right thing time and time again when you look in the entries and you go, crap, I have to run against fill in the blank. I know I'm not going to win this race. We moved horses actually from parks this year. We don't run at parks anymore because there are three or four trainers that are there that are atop the standings that you can't beat. You cannot beat them because of whatever they're doing. And it's not great horsemanship. It's not that they're better horsemen than the trainers that we had. It's just an unfair playing field. So to me, for Churchill Downs to come in, or excuse me, for Kentucky Racing to come in and say, we're not accepting your entries anymore. And Sal Sinatra did it earlier with other trainers as well in Maryland, said, we're not going to accept this anymore. And owners of the caliber of Spendthrift to say, we're moving horses away from you. To me, that's a bigger deterrent than the $5,000 fine that the trainers might get, or a week long or 2 week vacation that they're going to get. Oh, excuse me, suspension that they're going to get, where they can, you know, break a rule, have the horse trained under their assistant trainer, win the race, still make the same money, and then come back 10 or 14 days later as if nothing ever happened.
Joining a West Point Thoroughbreds partnership can vault you into the world of instant camaraderie among people surrounding high-class horses and stakes action for a fraction of the cost of trying to do it on your own. Learn more at westpointtb.com. We'll be right back after this message from West Point Thoroughbreds.
All the thrills. Fraction of the bills. Experience the power of the partnership. Change your life, make new friends, and compete at the highest level of thoroughbred racing. West Point Thoroughbreds, the gold standard in racing partnerships. Visit westpointtb.com.
I want to piggyback on what John had to say. And, you know, the finger of blame is we're blaming a lot of people. We're blaming the sport. We're blaming the system. We're blaming Bob Baffert. But, John, you're right. You got to blame the owners as well. And what is going to be really interesting as this story, we'll be talking about this story 3-4 years from now, for sure, is what is Baffert's future now in the sport? Does he pick right up where he left off, comes into the next year's Kentucky Derby with the five favorites and has, you know, 25 two-year-olds in his barn that cost $1 million? Or will people like Spendthrift say, you know, this is getting a little messy. Will there be more Spendthrifts? We don't want to have anything to do with this. John, I commend you, and I'm not just saying this because you're a friend and a colleague on the show. You guys have done a really good job of picking trainers who are squeaky clean and also good, which is not a whole lot of people. You know, guys that have no bad reputations, no positives whatsoever, but, you know, win at a good rate. So the owners have to be blamed. And this is not just Baffert. I mean, it was even more so with Service and Navarro. You know, so a guy buys a horse at a yearling sale for $1 million. And he says, if this horse wants to become worth $100 million, he's got to win the Kentucky Derby. That's what I want. I want to make him worth $100 million. Who is the trainer that can best do that? The answer is obvious, Bob Baffert. So when people are shopping at Keeneland September in a couple months from now, spending seven figures on horses, will those horses keep flowing to Bob Baffert or not? And, you know, a lot of owners out there need to look at themselves in the mirror. You know, I mean, Spendthrift, I don't think they did that to grandstand or anything like that. But, you know, they are to be commended for thinking this through. And I'm not saying everybody has to take their horses away from him, but I think that Spendthrift actually gave this a lot of thought and made, you know, at the end of the day, a decision which they thought was best for the sport. Probably not the best for Spendthrift Farm, because if they don't have Bob Baffert as their trainer, they probably won't win as many races as they have been winning. But they decided this is what's best for the sport and good for them.
Yeah, and I just want to make sure, Joe, let me just jump in one second. I just want to make sure that it's not a situation for our industry where if Bob Baffert starts to fade, you know, to the background because people aren't giving him big horses, that it's not another trainer who's doing the same thing. And that's, to me, is why it's so important for Heise to get involved and for us to follow those rules, because otherwise it's just going to be the next guy. It's just going to be the next potential alleged cheater that is going to hit the heights. And there may be some of those guys in there now. I mean, a friend of mine, kind of tongue in cheek, said, well, I know you ran eighth, but you might actually hit the board by the time all this is said and done. and that's, you know, it's kind of like, haha, but oh, you know what, mate, like you start looking at the standings and stuff and you go, you know, but that's yeah. again, another yeah. terrible look for our industry. Sorry, Joe, go ahead.
No, I was going to say that superfecta, the trainers and the superfecta, so people had some opinions about that.
Now, most importantly, though, since we have a light moment, if Medina Spirit does get knocked down, does that mean that I think the standings change and Al wins our tournament?
The biggest ramifications of all. Yeah, damn, Bill, you better be crossing your fingers.
Pray that that crown doesn't leave your head.
We'll have to take the virtual crown off of his head. Yeah, that's a good point, John. I hadn't thought of that.
You got to develop it all angles, Joe. All angles on the show.
No, right? It's like you bet on a horse. As soon as the stewards declare the race official, they pay off. Anybody who bet on a balloon out there, you're SH, you know what, out of luck, pal. We're not going on this path. My victory is set in stone.
Thank you for leading me into my next point, which is the money that people were cost with.
Oh my god. Yeah.
Dude, if Mandaloon wins that race, I had to pick four for a dollar. I had a win bet on Mandaloon. That probably cost me $6,000 or $7,000 conservatively. And I'm not gonna see a dime from that. And that's something that we haven't spoken about yet, but is a big deal. And in terms of deterring people from betting on the sport, like shout out to Swift Hitter on Twitter. I don't know if you guys follow him, but yeah. Swifty and his cohorts are trying to like organize something to get restitution for all the people who had Mandaloon. Now it's probably not going
to
work out because those races are official.
A class action suit, right, Joe? They're getting a class, action suit together.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, put me down on that if you file that suit, because that cost me a lot of money as well. And it's just one of those things where like, I don't even expect to get my money back. Like the horse, like a allegedly juiced up horse cost me $6,000-$7,000. And I'm like, yeah, there's no way I'm getting paid. Like that's, I'm assuming that about our sport. Like, and that's like almost beside the point for all of the other negative ramifications of this, but it is a big part of it. And I, you know, shout out to the guys who are making a stink about it, because they should. They absolutely should. This is the bettors, I think, are the people who get thought of last most of the time. And especially with a high profile thing like this, nobody's really talking about that part of it. As far as the owners go, you know, I think if you're an owner in racing, it's one of those things where it's very cut and dry, where you have to think to yourself in terms of who you're buying from, who you're sending horses to, what tracks you're running at. Am I part of the solution or am I part of the problem? You know, I think there are a lot of people in this industry that kind of work around the fringes where it's a little bit more complicated. I think owners, they have the most power and the most leverage. So you have to think to yourself whether or not you're furthering this problem in racing or if you're being part of the solution and you're doing something to try to fix the game. And owners obviously can't do that all on their own. They can't individually change the sport, but there is major, major complicity there. And we talked about it during the Service of Navarro thing where, you know, these ridiculous statements from owners where they were like pretending like they had no idea what was going on. We're so appalled that they, you know, the trainers were doing this. We just sent all of our horses to a guy who wins at 35% and turns horses into completely new animals off the claim. Who could have known? Who could have seen that this kind of punishment was coming for me? I'm usually above the law in my life. This isn't fair. But so that's kind of like, that's the responsibility that the owners have, which I think along with the people that run the tracks and the gaming commissions have the most leverage and have the most potential to punish these guys and restrict this kind of behavior. And, you know, Spendthrift, I think, is doing the right thing. But the thing is, you know, owners, not just them, owners over time have had chance after chance after chance to do the right thing and not encourage the Bob Baffert's of the world. And they haven't done it. And, you know, it's a weird thing because, you know, Baffert, you got to have some balls. I got to give Bob Baffert this. You got to have some balls to be getting the top stock, first of all, to get all like the best horses. You get your pick of the litter and to still be like, well, I'm going to see if I can like, you know, get away with this and that and like try to push the envelope here and see like, you know, that takes a lot of balls to be able to, you know, it's like if Nick Saban were also injecting all the Alabama players with HGH. It's like, you already have the best players. Like, what do you need to do this for? Just roll the ball out and you can beat this other team 99% of the time. And that's, you know, that's kind of how it is to be Bob Baffert. You already have all the best stock, but it's not enough. It's never enough. And that's how we get to this point. And there are a lot of, like I said, there's a lot of people who have been complicit along the way in letting him get to this point where he thinks he's above the law. You can just look at his responses during that press conference and his behavior this week. Never any single iota of responsibility taken. It's all somebody else's fault. It's a conspiracy. The tests are too sensitive. It was an ointment. Like, it's cancel culture. It's just one thing after another of why he doesn't think he is ever to be held responsible. And I think that he, with good reason, feels that way because of the way he's been treated. He's gotten the red carpet treatment in racing for a long, long time, despite some shady things around him along, through all the years. And he has reason to believe that he's above the law. And, we'll see how above the law he is going forward now that it's blown up in all of our faces, like I said. This week's TDN Story of the Week, which is the story of the week everywhere, is brought to you by the Minnesota Racehorse Engagement Project. Find out how you can get involved in racehorse ownership at Canterbury Park this summer with several options and investments ranging from $250 to $10,000. Visit racehorseminnesota.com to learn more. We'll be right back after this message from the Minnesota Racehorse Engagement Project.
It's said that life is simply a series of memories we share with the ones we love. The experiences, the joys, the thrills. Imagine a life that includes meeting your very own racehorse for the first time. The thrill of watching your racehorse passing others one by one down this stretch, and then sharing the winner's circle celebration with those closest to you. Let the Minnesota Racehorse Engagement Project help guide you to the experiences and memories you deserve. Owning a racehorse is less expensive and more attainable than you think. Visit racehorseminnesota.com. That's racehorseminnesota.com. And begin making your memories this summer at Canterbury Park.
The Green Group Guest of the Week is sponsored by The Green Group, an accounting, tax, consulting, and advisory firm specializing in the thoroughbred industry. With over 500 clients in the horse business, they have proven strategies to save taxes. We'll learn more about how they can help you at www.greenco.com. So our Green Group Guest of the Week this week is the chairman and CEO of the Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association, also one of the leading attorneys in racing, Alan Foreman. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you. Good morning.
So we're glad to have you fresh off of an hour through the Steve Bick torture chamber. We're glad that you made time to come right back on with us. So we're going to ask you some general questions. My first question is, we saw Churchill Downs come out with the statement that saying they're not going to allow any more entries for Bob Baffert until this whole thing with the betamethasone is cleared up. What legal standing do tracks and racing jurisdictions have to ban somebody like Bob Baffert from entering in their races? What can tracks really do as a level of deterrence for trainers?
Sure. So I think it's important for people to understand that there are two layers here. This is a state regulatory matter. The regulation of racing is done by the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission, not by Churchill Downs. And that's the same in every jurisdiction. And what's happening right now with Medina Spirit is a Kentucky Horse Racing Commission regulatory matter. And what Churchill Downs did was more of a public relations stand to, I think, for the brand, the Kentucky Derby brand that they covet. They were taking a stand with respect to this whole situation. Tracks have the common law right to exclude anyone they want, typically unless it's for reasons of race, color, or creed, your typical civil rights violations. But they have the common law right to do so. But when you're dealing with licensees, it isn't as broadly based as you would think it is. And there's quite a body of law with respect to the exclusion of licensees in what should be appropriate circumstances. And the question here legally would be if Bob Baffert and his team wanted to challenge it, whether Churchill Downs really has the right to do so under the circumstances. This is a routine medication violation. Yes, it's the Kentucky Derby. You have routine medication violations all the time. If they're going to ban Bob Baffert, do you ban every horseman who has a medication violation? So these are handled by regulators, not by racetracks, but with certain nefarious individuals, and we know who they are, and over time we've had them, tracks will take the position that we're going to prohibit you from racing at our tracks, or we're not going to take your entries. And those horsemen will go from that track and they'll go to another track. That's been a common complaint. Bill Finley, I know you've railed about that on many occasions. They'll leave Maryland and they'll go to Delaware, or they can't race at Delaware, they'll go to New Jersey, or they'll go out to California. It happens all the time. So this, in this instance, this is Churchill Downs exercising its rights. Now, Bob Baffert's not racing there now, so it's kind of an empty gesture, but it does say something to the public. So when you fast forward to Maryland Jockey Club, they've been put in a very uncomfortable position because you have a regulatory matter that hasn't even started yet. It's been pretty much a phone call to Bob telling him that he had a positive test. He gets formal notice. He will have the right to get a split sample, and that will start the process. There's been no determination made. So what does Maryland Jockey Club do? Well, there's many people in the public who think that since Churchill Downs has suspended Bob, he should be suspended everywhere. If the Kentucky Racing Commission had suspended Bob, then it would be effective everywhere. But when a track does it, there's no reciprocity. So Maryland Jockey Club looked at what its legal rights were and what the legal landscape was and determined that they really did not have a basis to exclude Bob Baffert and Medina Spirit from running this weekend. And I think their statement yesterday was spot on, that you don't make things up on the fly. There are due process rights. You have to do this in a methodical way. And, oh, by the way, we're going to substantially drug test all of the Baffert horses prior to Saturday. They will be tested even more extensively than the out of competition tests that were done prior to the Derby. And his horses will not be permitted to run Saturday unless and until they test clean. But the bottom line to your answer is, if the tracks want to exclude someone, they can, but they may be subject to legal action.
Alan, you wear a lot of different hats. I wanted you to keep or put on your lawyer's hat. And one of the things that's been interesting about this story is that normally when somebody gets in trouble, whether it's in horse racing or any facet of life, an attorney tells the person, shut up. Don't say a word. We don't want to hear anything. This has been the complete opposite of this. I mean, Baffert has done, he goes on Fox News. He's been interviewed by dozens of people and dozens of shows, and he keeps coming up with these excuses and coming out with press releases and statements. Why is that their strategy, do you think? And do you agree with it?
I don't know what their strategy is. And I don't know if this is what Bob wanted to do, or he was under advice to do it, whether they're working with a crisis management team. I don't know. With the information that came out yesterday, it changes the whole landscape. I mean, the first thing that you do if you're a trainer and you're notified of a positive test is to ask your personnel and to ask your veterinarian, do we have betamethasone in the barn? If we do, was it being used on this horse? How are we using it? You would know that fairly quickly. You wouldn't know it 48 to 96 hours after the fact. And you certainly wouldn't go out on public television and say, I don't use the stuff. We don't have it in the barn. I don't know how it got there. And it's everybody else's fault. That's basic stuff. And I've prosecuted cases for two decades, medication cases for the United States Equestrian Federation. And the first thing we ask a competitor when we notify them of a positive test is, look at everything you've done for the past 7 days. Tell us everything you gave to the horse, everything you administered to the horse. Let's see your vet records. And you can typically get to the bottom of what happened. So the strategy makes no sense to me. I certainly wouldn't counsel my clients that way, but maybe there were compelling reasons to do so. One compelling reason is the rumor mill was off the charts on Saturday night. I got tipped off Saturday night. So it was out there, and I think they felt the need to get out in front of the story.
And Alan, one of the things that we keep trumpeting as our hope upon hope of this industry is, HISA and a uniform set of rules, headed up by Travis Tigard and the group that they just put together. Are we just, kind of whistling past the graveyard, or do you feel personally that HISA is going to be able to come in and kind of regulate this industry that is just running rampant right now?
Well, but it's not going to change what happened here. This is the administration of a therapeutic medication, and there are many therapeutic medications. These horses you know, they are cared for properly. They are treated with therapeutic medications. We're not dealing with a nefarious substance here. But where I think HISA does come in is twofold. Number one, I think people are grappling right now with how do we respond to this? You've got Churchill doing one thing. You've got the Kentucky Racing Commission doing another. Now you've got the Maryland Racing Commission implicated, the Stronach Group. People are going to look to NYRA. People are going to look elsewhere. I mean, HISA is, I think, going to bring confidence to the process because they're going to be the spokesman. They're going to handle this, and it's going to be a challenge for them. I'll tell you why in a second. It'll be a challenge for them, but that's going to bring confidence to the system. The other thing that HISA brings is that if this had been the Breeders' Cup Classic at Santa Anita, the penalty would have been a $500 fine and no loss of purse. Because under California's rules, they do not disqualify for this type of a corticosteroid violation. They just had that instance. Was it Peter Miller just a couple of months ago in a stakes race had a positive test for another corticosteroid, isoflufridone? And I know because a Maryland owner finished second and wanted to know if that meant disqualification. And my recollection was in California, it is not a disqualification. And sure enough, California confirmed it to me. And Peter Miller was given a $500 fine and no loss of purse. Now, they in California, they might have aggravated the finding because Bob Baffert had a positive test in the Kentucky Oaks last October. September. And so that's a second violation in 1 year. But I suspect in California, it would have been just a fine and no loss of purse. So HISA will bring uniformity to that. In the Mid-Atlantic, and John, you know this, we tighten the penalties for these substances because we're trying to protect. These are measures for the safety and welfare of the horse. So we backed up the corticosteroid recommendation from 7 days to 14 days. And we felt that, well, if there isn't a sufficient penalty, the trainers will, they're not going to abide by the rule because there's really no incentive for them to do so. And so we required a mandatory disqualification for these kinds of violations, as Kentucky did. They followed suit. And that, I think, is what most jurisdictions would be doing. So HISA will bring uniformity to that. Where HISA's going to have the same problem unless they address it. And that is, if this was Major League Baseball, if this was the NFL, you don't find out about a player's medication or a steroid violation or whatever, violation of their medication rules until after there's been a primary test, a referee B test, and usually a hearing already with the athlete before it's announced. In racing, because we have purse money, and when the regulator puts a hold on the purse, everybody who was in the race knows that something's going on with that race. That's what starts the rumor mill. And then the investigators come to inspect the barn, and there blows your confidentiality. And I think HISA is going to have the same problem unless they can figure some way around it. That confidentiality is going to be a big problem.
Well, I'm glad you guys brought up HISA, because I wanted to ask, you know, you are the chairman of the Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association. There are other horsemen's groups who have sued to stop HISA from coming into effect. It's supposed to come into effect next July. We've kind of speculated on this show about what those lawsuits mean. We don't think they're going to be particularly successful, but it might drag out the start date of the act. What do you see as the prospects for those lawsuits, and whether or not they're going to succeed, but I think more importantly, whether or not they're going to delay the implementation?
Well, I would have not thought that they would delay implementation. And I did not believe at least the initial suit had merit for a number of reasons. One is for what we call standing, whether the plaintiffs have the ability to go into court at this point and challenge. And also because HISA is just organizing now. They haven't adopted any rules. They haven't adopted the funding mechanism. So the various things that are being challenged haven't even taken effect yet. On the issue of what we call preemption, where this authority will preempt state law in certain areas. In putting this whole HISA bill together, we consulted with what we believe to be the top constitutional law experts in the country who helped to structure the bill in a way that would avoid the constitutional problems that I complained about in the original Horse Racing Integrity Act. With the entrance, however, of the state of Oklahoma and West Virginia, it somewhat changes it because they're in a position, because it preempts their regulatory scheme, they may have standing. And so at least they will, I believe, have the ability to argue in court that there should be a timeout here because their ability to regulate is being implicated here. The case is in two different jurisdictions, and if they disagree, it could help to move this case up to the Supreme Court, because the Supreme Court usually likes to take cases where there is a difference among jurisdictions and courts as to trying to so-called settle the field. I think we're all proceeding and should proceed under the assumption that these lawsuits are not going to be successful and be ready to go when HISA takes effect next year. But the legal system is such that, you know, anything can happen. But I think we need to get moving on it and we need to get it implemented. We need to know where we are.
I'm going to change the subject if people don't mind, because Alan is a great guest when it comes to the future of Maryland racing, because he really has his finger on the pulse there. And the back story is this bill is passed. Tons of money comes in from the state so that they can rebuild Pimlico and rebuild Laurel. But since this all happened, we really haven't heard much whatsoever. Could you bring us up to speed on what's happening, what the timeline is? And for example, will the 2022 Preakness be run at Pimlico, the old dilapidated Pimlico? Will it be run at this new beautiful track? Or might it even have to go to Laurel for a year or something like that?
So two things. Number one, there is no state money going into this project. This is all industry money that's going to pay for it. And then through the sale of bonds, we will be paying the debt service on it. So there's this misnomer out there that the state is pouring tens of million dollars into the racing industry. What makes this project so unique and what makes it work is that we're paying for it and it's not coming from taxpayer dollars, number one. Number two, the Preakness will always be run at Pimlico, uninterrupted. So even during construction, the Preakness will run at Pimlico. One of the great things about the Pimlico plan is that it contemplates a significant overlay of temporary seating, similar to what you would see at a PGA golf tour event or some of your major sporting events where they do overlays that, quite frankly, sometimes look nicer than the facilities that are hosting the event. So every year that will be done, even during construction. This is it's a massive project. Nothing of its kind has ever been done anywhere in the world, because we're doing two racing facilities, both Pimlico and Laurel. Pimlico will be will have a massive redevelopment, including the racing aspects of it. And then Laurel, the backstretch will be completely leveled and rebuilt, new surfaces and a new grandstand. So Laurel will be a new racing facility, and maybe the first and last of its kind in racing. We never contemplated when we looked at this that any shovel would go into the ground in 2021, this year. It passed the Maryland legislature and became effective last June. It's under the auspices of the Maryland Stadium Authority, which is world famous. I mean, this is not the MTHA and the Stronach Group building these facilities. This is the Maryland Stadium Authority. They built Camden Yards. They built Raven Stadium. They're well known around the world for the quality and beauty of their work. And they're overseeing this project. And because it's being overseen by the state from a construction standpoint, many of the services to be provided have to be procured through a procurement system. You have to advertise for bids. You have to solicit interest from around the world. There are bidders who bid on it. You have to have teams that select who gets to do the project. They do the pricing. They make their financial bids. The design team has been selected. They were just selected 2 months ago, and they're already at work full time. We're in the process of procuring the construction team for Pimlico. That should be wrapped up within the next month, and then they'll move to the procurement for Laurel. There are engineers working. There are design teams working. The Department of the Environment has been out, the Army Corps of Engineers. We're working from a design concept that I worked on, but now the rubber has hit the road and you're going to see real concepts. And I know by this time next year at Preakness, you will see the designs. You will see the work beginning. The work will probably this time next year begin at Laurel, because I think we need to get Laurel done first so we can get the horses over to Laurel and we can run on a year-round basis at Laurel while we're doing Pimlico. It's a massive project that I The hope would be 2024, but maybe more realistically, the entire project will be completed by 2025.
And hopefully we'll still have racing by 2025. I mean, it's crazy with all the hurdles that have been thrown in front of us. I say that tongue in cheek, Alan. But
I said to Steve Bick, I said, you know, because everybody's down right now. And, you know, you get down to a point where you're down so long, it seems like up. But I really do look to the future. You know, this is a very resilient business. We've been seriously challenged, and I hope that Maryland will become one of the bright spots for the industry.
Absolutely. And Alan, one of the most fascinating interviews that we've done over the past year was with Sal Sinatra. I mean, he's a guy who knows all aspects of the industry and really represents, you know, the brand so well. And he's not afraid to you know, kick people out, owners, trainers, jockeys, you know, if they're not following the rules. One of the things that came up before all these races that we heard from fans, and one of the head scratching rules that they, you know, questioned was married jockeys, that they have to be coupled entries. And that's a big thing in New York. And obviously you and I work together in, you know, for in New York racing. But I guess the question is, you know, if married jockeys are coupled entries, then why not jockeys that are siblings or cousins? Like, where's the line and why is that line drawn?
Well, he's brothers. I mean, you got a lot of it. Look, these are old archaic rules. Right. This is an old New York archaic rule. And we have the old husband and wife rule, where if you took action against the husband, that was against the wife, even though they might be operating separately. But okay, so what about significant others? How do you deal with that? You know, there's an easy way to resolve that, and that is through the regulatory process. If you think that the integrity of the game has been damaged by some act or action of one of the two, you take action against them. You mean to tell me that in today's world, we can't regulate that rather than just prohibiting it? And so, you know, I can tell you in Maryland, even if they had the rule, they wouldn't enforce it. We don't have that in Maryland. I don't know about elsewhere. It is peculiar to New York. It is an archaic rule. And as you're learning with Knife and otherwise, we work with the Gaming Commission and we work with NYRA to try to change these rules. Change can be slow, but New York has been far more receptive over the past 4 or 5 years to make changes than they historically ever would have been able to do. There's really no point to it. It's obviously an integrity-based public perception situation, but very easily dealt with.
Yeah, I didn't even know that was a rule until this past year. Before we let you get out of here, I wanted to ask about the Match Series, which you guys brought back. It's the Mid-Atlantic Thoroughbred Championship Series. It's very, very popular in the Mid-Atlantic, and I think it's a good job of uniting those circuits in a way where there's a lot of disjointedness, I think, between all those tracks. Normally, this does a good job of uniting them. I noticed that some of the graded stakes this weekend at Pimlico are Match Series races. Can you talk about that and bringing that back after last year?
It's really funny. We started the Match Series back in 1997. I did it. I put it together after the American Championship Racing Series fell apart. And I thought, well, maybe there's another way to attack this problem. And why don't we try to do something regionally? And it was the first opportunity to bring an entire region together. And it worked until the infighting that is legend in horse racing broke it up in 2003 or four, I believe. And there were times in the interim where people would say, you know, this Match Series was great. Why don't you bring it back? When we did the first iteration of Match, it was mostly graded stakes races. It was the top end of racing in the Mid-Atlantic. And when we brought it back, when there was interest to bring it back 3-4 years ago, it was, you know, let's try to find the best horses in the region. Let's not try to exclude those through the graded races process. So we eliminated graded races from the series. And the series came back and it was incredibly popular, but then we get the challenge of the pandemic and we have to shut down again. We looked at it last fall and said, well, can we bring it back in 2021? We didn't know we'd be out of the pandemic. And so we decided not to bring the series back this year. And Maryland said, well, why don't we run a series? And so Maryland put a series together. They had these graded races from very popular Preakness weekend. And we said, well, should we have graded races or not? They said, well, Maryland horses and Mid-Atlantic horses are really contesting these races. There's no reason not to. And then Virginia saw what we were doing and they wanted to partner because they're running their meet during the summer and they thought they fit perfectly into the series. We asked all the other partners in the region, do you mind if we do the series this year, albeit it will be done primarily at Maryland with some racing at Colonial? They said, go for it. So very unexpectedly, very surprisingly, and to my great pleasure, the series is coming back. Bill Finley and Dave Johnson have been tremendous supporters of the series. I like to say we try to slay an elephant with a pea shooter because I have no marketing money. I have nothing this year. All the money's going into the bonuses to try to stimulate interest in the series. So we're doing it in kind of a hybrid way. It's different. We've got the four divisions, six races in each division. We're going to run starting this weekend and go into December, which we typically don't do. And it's a placeholder. The full series will come back full bore next year, and we're excited about it. There's no reason why it won't come back. And it enjoys the support of every stakeholder in the Mid-Atlantic region. And it's one of the things that I've really enjoyed about in my career in the business is being able to market a little bit and promote, bring everybody together.
Yeah, and you guys do a great job. And like I said, it's a great unifying force in a sport that doesn't have enough of that. So good luck this year with the Masters. Alan, thank you so much for coming on. We know it's a busy week for you. We appreciate the insights.
Always a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thanks,
guys.
The Green Group Guest of the Week is sponsored by The Green Group, an accounting, tax, consulting, and advisory firm specializing in the thoroughbred industry. It's this week's Green Group Guest of the Week, Alan Foreman, will receive a free one-hour tax consultation. Learn more at greenco.com. We'll be right back after this message from The Green Group.
The Green Group is widely recognized as the top-rated tax and accounting firm specializing in the horse business. Why do the top owners, breeders, pinhookers, and trainers trust The Green Group as their tax advisors? The difference is experience. Firm founder Len Green has over four decades of experience owning, breeding, and racing horses. First-hand knowledge gives Green Group clients proven tax and money-saving strategies. Visit The Green Group at www.greenco.com. The Green Group, proven strategies to save you taxes.
Hey, Joe, you brought up the fact of what happens to the people that bet on Mandaloon like yourself. And I got to tell you something. I'm very confident about this. There will be a lawsuit. There will be a collective lawsuit issued by bettors to get paid. And what they'll do is they'll sue Baffert, maybe sue Amar Zidane as well, the owner. And the reason why I say that is there's a precedent. Now, we don't talk a lot about harness racing on the show for obvious reasons. But last year about this time, PETA got behind a gambler who had bet on a horse to win that finished second at the Meadowlands behind a horse who later tested positive for drugs. They got the PETA money, the lawyers and everything. PETA wanted to embarrass horse racing and thought this would be a great embarrassment for it. And what had all happened at the end of the day, they didn't win a lawsuit, but the lawyer for the trainer said, you got to settle with these guys. I think they gave him $20,000. And it says, if not, your legal bill is going to go into the hundreds of thousands. So just settle. I guarantee, I know nobody likes PETA, I understand that, but I guarantee you PETA is going out there right now trying to find people that can prove they bet on Mandaloon, which is very easy to do now because of your ADW records. And, you know, John Q. Better and PETA are going to get together and they're going to, I guarantee you, they're going to sue Bob Baffert because, you know, if Mandaloon wins the race, I win 20 grand. Well, I'm suing you for 20 grand, Bob.
Yes, please, PETA. You want to be the newest sponsor on the show? We'll make it work. Whoever, I'll take a settlement too. I don't need all 7 or 8,000 or whatever it would have cost me. But yeah, I mean, there should be litigation over something like that because the bettors, you know, at the end of the day, if Medina Spirit is indeed disqualified, the owners are going to get paid, the trainer is going to get paid, the jockey's going to get. The only people who don't get paid are the suckers like me, who keep pumping money into this sport that hates me and never wants me to succeed. So yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And hopefully there is something like that coming. Like I said, some of the guys on racing Twitter have floated that idea of banding together because, you know, there's no reason that we shouldn't get some kind of restitution from that. It's a clunky segue, but I wanted to segue from that into the legal decision to allow Baffert and Medina Spirit to run in the Preakness. Now, this is a tough thing. Like, you know, I love to get up here and pound my fist and rail about these things, but I thought this was a very tough decision. I don't know that there was an easy, obvious answer here because, you know, the horse The split sample is still out, so it hasn't been 100% confirmed that, you know, he's going to get DQ'd from the Derby. There still needs time to work itself out. So in the meantime, I think it's, I don't know, I think it's a tough thing to say he can't run his horses there. I know Churchill Down said it, but, you know, like Alan Foreman said, you know, Churchill doesn't really accept entries from Baffert this time of year anyway. They don't have a big race coming up. So I thought it was an interesting call. I think they made the right call in letting him run, and I think Baffert is definitely making the right call to get the hell out of here and not be at Pimlico and not be on television. This will be probably the only day he won't be on television all week is when he's, you know, on Saturday when he's watching the Preakness from home. I think that's a pretty good idea because he would be a major distraction. And, you know, supposedly the horse is going to go through all sorts of like rigorous blood testing and all this stuff before the race, which I think begs the question, like, why isn't there that kind of scrutiny on Bob Baffert horses to begin with after all of the things that he's done allegedly over the years? I mean, obviously it's a financial undertaking to do that kind of stuff. And that's, I think, one of the things that's going to kind of be a hang up in HISA is how to pay for all this. So yeah, it was a tough decision for Pimlico and for the Maryland Jockey Club. You wonder if they're able to do this kind of scrutiny and these kind of blood tests for a horse coming into the Preakness in special circumstances, why we can't do that, you know, for every big race from a trainer or a horse from a trainer that has some kind of shady positives and stuff in their history. Anyway, nevertheless, there's going to be extra scrutiny on Medina Spirit and Concert Tour, who's also in the race. It's not going to be a great look if Medina Spirit and Concert Tour run 1-2 after the entire debacle of the past week, but it's definitely a legitimate possibility. I think that Pimlico and the Maryland Jockey Club did the right thing here, but it's murky. What do you guys think?
Yeah, Joe, I agree with you. I think they did do the right thing here. And, you know, we're all trying to be tough right now and tough on Baffert, and the game is too lenient. So it might, by saying this, it seems like we're contradicting ourselves, but you still have to look at how our society functions with rules and laws. And the key thing, which you brought up, is no split sample has been tested yet. He hasn't even been notified or legally suspended or put on notice from the Kentucky Racing Commission in an official capacity that this horse indeed tested positive. So imagine if this split sample comes back 3 weeks from now and they say, oh my God, there was nothing in there, never mind. Then, you know, the injustice that would have been done to Baffert in that instance is just not something you can take a chance. I'm sure the Maryland Jockey Club checked with their lawyers, et cetera. And at the end of the day, I think they made the right decision. And it was, you know, look, they can't win either way. If they let him run, now you're letting the cheater run in the Preakness. If they don't let him run, it says, oh, you know, you're not letting the guy, you know, you're depriving the guy of due process. But I mean, this is America. And, you know, he really right now, so far as this horse, has been convicted of nothing, has accepted no guilt. So I don't think they have any basis to go ahead and say you can't run. And I, you know, obviously, I don't think Churchill should have banned him either, to be honest with you. But again, like that was a little bit easier to grandstand. Okay, you're not going to run another horse here for 364 days, but we're going to ban you. Interesting, what will they do for next year's Derby, Churchill Down, so far as Bob Baffert? Stay tuned.
I hate when I agree with Bill Finley. It stinks for the show, but you know, Bill, I think you're right. They didn't have, Maryland had no other option other than to talk to their lawyers and say, we have to accept the entry at this point. And I'm sure, you know, because we've had Sal Sinatra on the show before, I'm sure it's just eating away at him. You know, that he doesn't really have an out at this point. He's got to accept the entry. They have to run the race and see what happens. I don't know secretly who, you know, the racing office is going to be rooting for or rooting against. And I throw this out to you guys both, because I don't really have a lot more to add, but did all this, everything that happened this week, is that going to increase ratings or is it going to decrease ratings for the
Well, that's what I was going to say. That was going to be my next point, is that I think this is going to be the most highly rated Pimlico or Preakness of all time. Like, because you guys are talking about it, it's all over the news. It's everywhere. And, you know, I did a little TV spot the other night. Thank you for racing, for being messy all the time, which gets me on TV more, which is the most important thing out of all of this. But yeah, this is going to be an extremely highly rated Preakness. I think people are going to tune in because it's either way, it's like, It's a redemption story of the horse who, you know, had the positive test, who is now being tested more rigorously and shows that, you know, he's got that true winner's spirit. Or it's going to be the juice horse goes down in flames. Bob Baffert was too cowardly to show up to even watch his horse lose. So either way, I think it's a really good story in so far as this Saturday. It's not a good story for the sport overall, but in terms of getting eyeballs on this Saturday's race, it's a great story. So, I think there's going to be a ton of ratings.
I think the ratings will be through the roof. Americans love train wrecks. They love to see the human wreckage and find out what's going to be. It'll be interesting. Well, I think there may have more people tuning into this race than the Derby.
I think so, too.
I think so. I definitely agree. There was one kernel of what I thought was comedic during this whole process, this difficult process. And that was when Baffert had that kind of thrown together press conference in front of his barn. And he went out there and said it was a gut punch and it was terrible and all the things. And again, granted, you cannot win a press conference like this, because unless he was going to walk up there and say, I'm 100% guilty, which means that he's convicted or whatever, then he's screwed. Or he's going to walk up there and they're going to scrutinize every little thing that he says. But there was one point in time in the middle of the process where he just, you could see he was uncomfortable. He looked physically shaken. His voice was, you know, was not strong. And he said, I'm just trying to absorb this gut punch. And somebody asked him a question about the picograms and the testing. And he turned to his attorney, who was off camera, and said, Craig Robertson, you want to handle this? And Craig goes, no, Bob, you got this. And I could just, under his glasses, you could just see Bob go, oh, like, thanks. I'm paying you hundreds of thousands of dollars to protect me. And I throw you a lifeline, you know, please help me out. Give me a chance to kind of get my bearings. And Craig was like, nope.
Yeah, I thought he was a great lawyer. He had that Arkansas Gaming Commission over a barrel, but... Yep. You know, in this case, he was like, yeah, go set yourself on fire.
Bro. Yeah, he was like, I don't want anything to do with this. I didn't recommend this. Nothing. Like, nothing.
Who's Craig? I don't
Craig. There was like a puff of smoke.
So just to put a bow on it, that was like something we didn't really talk about was the press conference and how ridiculous that looked. And, it was, first of all, the idea that Baffert is the one announcing the news. Like that's you just right off the bat, you have a major issue if the guy who allegedly cheated to win the Derby is the first one telling the media about it. That's step one of the clown show of regulation and racing. But the other part is like he just had no information. He had no information. It was all like just, well, someone's out to get me. The horse has never been treated with any of this. It reminded me of a certain guy and the way he would get up in front of podiums completely unprepared and then claim witch hunts and everything. So that was a particularly ridiculous look for the sport. But
on brand. I mean, it was right on brand.
Of course. Yeah. Predictably ridiculous. Yeah, no, 100%. That was, you know, there was some comedic relief in that press conference. I think people got a kick out of it as bad as it made racing look. And the other thing I want to say before we wrap this up is I want to shout out our esteemed co-host and colleague Bill Finley, who's done really good reporting on this all week. So if you haven't read all the stories on the TDN website, click one. It's most likely by Bill about this topic. So shout out to Bill and everybody at the TDN who's been working on this. It's never boring, guys. It's never boring. It might not always be good or fun or just or any of that. It ain't never boring. So, well, it's good for the show at least.
Right, right. Are there any of the races going on this weekend? Like, do we?
I don't know. Yeah, we didn't touch on any of that. It's all right. Maybe there'll be a rumor of another race happening. But yep, we'll break it all down next week. Today, we're welcoming a new sponsor, Legacy Bloodstock. Thank you so much, Legacy Bloodstock, for coming aboard at Legacy Bloodstock. Tommy and Wendy Eastham don't sell their own horses, which means no conflict of interest when asked by a prospective buyer to show them their best horses. They don't think about what's best for them. They're here to work for you. We'll be right back after this message from Legacy Bloodstock.
Being a small family business, I guess we're part of a dying breed. We're really grateful for the people that entrust us. We know it's a huge responsibility.
We're always with your horse. every step of the way when it comes to being at the sales ground, showing your horses, we are with your horse.
Just driving up and down the road every day, there's not a time that I don't look out and feel a responsibility to the sport, the animal, the people that come to invest in the game. I want to see as many people enjoy this sport as they possibly can, because we do have the most beautiful sport in the world.
All right, so that's going to do it for this eventful episode of the TDN Writers Room presented by Keeneland. A reminder that the Keeneland May Digital Sales entries close May 18th. You can go to keenelanddigital.com for details. I want to thank Bill Finley, John Green, our Green Group guest of the week, Alan Foreman, our producer, Patty Wolf, our associate producer, Katie Ritz, and our editors, Danny Siper, Aaliyah LaRocca, and Anthony LaRocca. Thank you so much for watching. Enjoy this messy Preakness. We'll be back next week to talk all about it.